This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Therese Fowler's new novel, Exposure, is a Romeo and Juliet story with a modern twist. 18-year-old Anthony is involved in a secret relationship with 17-year-old Amelia. When Amelia's father finds naked photos of Anthony on his daughter's computer, the boy faces potentially devastating legal consequences. It's an interesting plot for a novel, but it also mirrors real life. It involves sexting, that is, a nude photo sent to somebody else, usually by phone. Under some circumstances, a young adult could end up labeled a sex offender. The novel was not only an imaginative exercise for Therese, she has personal experience as well. Her son was arrested for sexting when he was 19. Everything turned out okay in the end, but it got her thinking about the issues involved and led to her latest novel. Therese joins us in the studio now to talk about Exposure. Welcome to the State of Things. Good to have you back.
Yeah, thanks, Frank.
Let's start with the true story. Tell us about what happened with your son and how that sparked the idea for this novel.
Sure. It was late summer 2009, and I was actually working on a different book at the time, the book that I thought was going to be my third novel. And my son came home and came out onto the screen porch, and he closed the door behind him, and he said, "I have some news. I may be in some trouble." And it turned out he had just been questioned by the police, who weren't sure that what he'd done was a crime, but thought it might be, and they would get back to him. So he explained to me the situation, which was just that as you described, he shared a photo of himself unwisely, but obviously not so unusually, because this is going on everywhere. And the parents found the photo, called the police, and led to his being charged with something called dissemination of harmful materials to a minor, because he was over 18 and the girl involved was under 18.
And they knew each other.
They were friends, yeah. And in their case, it was not as in Exposure, where it's a love story. It was a flirtation at the most, which is, I think, most commonly how this happens.
And what was it like for him? There was, once the police and the district attorney decided they thought it was a crime, there was a lot of media attention.
There was. I was really surprised by this. We were all really surprised by this because it seemed like such a small issue, not even something that should be a crime, in our opinion. And the media, you know, kind of found that salacious angle. And they were contacting my son quite a lot, came to our house looking for him. Stories in the newspaper, on the local television. We really felt like we had, you know, this sort of odor emanating from all of us. And it was surreal and ludicrous sort of at the same time.
Well, and the fact that at the time, as you said, the police weren't sure if it was a crime. This wasn't.
Initially, that's
yeah.
right.
Yeah. And so what is the law around this? How is it a crime?
It's intended to be a pornography distribution charge. And so because, in this case, my son was over 18, anyone under 18 who receives what they would call pornographic material, you know, it's the ironic situation of if my son and this girl had had an intimate relationship and a parent had caught them in bed together, let's say, there would be no crime. But the pornography laws, in my opinion, are antiquated. They're not realistic in scope. And so right. the prosecutor, I guess, found that this was the one way to maybe punish somebody for doing something, I don't know, inadvisable for sure.
And it may have been a test of the law. Had there been other cases like this?
I don't think there were many in North Carolina. When we went to talk to attorneys, some had heard of it, and that was, in fact, the first time I'd heard the term sexting, but the attorneys were aware. But nationally, yes, a number of cases prior. But it was, I think, kind of a very new thing in 2009 as far as teenagers being charged with these kinds of statutes.
So how did things turn out for your son?
Fortunately, after about 3 months of discussion, the district attorney decided to drop the charges.
And what was the basis of that? I mean, you had to work on that.
Well,
I mean,
our attorney did.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Honestly, I couldn't yeah. tell you.
When did you decide this would be the grist for your novel? Did you have to set aside what you were working on?
Yeah, I did. About a month after the charge was dismissed, which so it was November of 2009, after reading about other families who had been in similar situations and in some kind, sometimes, you know, much more tragic outcomes, I thought this was the kind of thing that I would write about anyway. and the subject just wouldn't leave me alone. So I went to my son and I asked him how he would feel if I were to write a book that was not his story or even my story, but a story about this subject. And he was very supportive. And so was everyone, you know, in my publishing team. And so I had a spring deadline, and then all I did for the next few months was just get the first draft down.
Now, it's not completely harmless. You can imagine not wanting, say, you know, young women, underage women, for instance, if we're going to stick with the idea that there's some kind of age of consent, receiving unsolicited photos like unsolicited material.
If it were unsolicited, that would be a different story altogether. The charge, I think, would fit if that were the situation. But in this case, the young lady had already told the police that it was by invitation she asked for.
And how is the plot now from the novel different than your case?
The two teenagers involved are in love, and their relationship is secret from her family, but not from his. And so her father is a very protective sort, which I imagine any father of a teenage girl would be. So the teens are in love, which was not the case in my son's situation. And then, of course, it becomes a much bigger problem when materials are found in her computer, additional materials in his, more charges are levied. And it turns out that they're both sort of in this quagmire, which fortunately was not the case for us.
Did you do a lot of research then into the whole issue of sexting, the legal issues, when you began work on the book?
While my son's case was ongoing, I did a great deal of research just trying to figure out what in the world this was and what might happen and what we should do. But then, of course, I added to that for all the particulars on, you know, what the charges are, why and in what situations they are applied, you know, what the consequences of all those things are. You know, I'm not a legal scholar. But I found it all very, you know, incredibly interesting and troubling.
Consequences are pretty serious. You can be labeled a sex offender for life.
Right, and have to register, you know, on a sex offender registry. And it can follow you, forever.
What is the legal theory behind this, and how much does it, and what is it rooted in, do you think? Is it rooted in any kind of... Because we know that some of the sexual offender registry has to do with a psychiatric theory that in some cases this is a difficult thing to cure. That's the medical theory that goes behind the legal consequence. Does that apply in the case of sexting? Is it the same thing?
Wow. I hesitate to make any kind of, you know, blanket statement on that, but I would say for teenagers, generally, I doubt that many of them would ever, you know, be clinically labeled sex offenders. Teens are sort of naturally curious. And you know, this is a funny thing. When I was in New York last fall meeting with my publishing team, we were all out at lunch and talking about the book and the issues. And my publisher said, you know, when we were younger, you know, people just used Polaroids. The same behaviors were occurring. They just weren't using the modern technology. You know, we didn't have those technologies. And interestingly, there's been a lot of discussion about the book, you know, in blogs and online conversations about how would you do it if you had the technology when you were young? And most people, you know, say, yeah, absolutely. And you believe that it's just between you and that person. You never imagine that it's going to go farther.
How are the parents? Describe the relationship between the two parents in your novel.
In the novel. They are acquainted because Amelia's father, rather Anthony's mother, is a teacher, and Amelia's father has met her, you know, at parent-teacher conferences. So they know one another somewhat. That's the extent of it. He does have some sort of, you know, judgments about her because she's a single mom. And not a great success in the world the way, you know, he imagines himself to be.
Be interesting to think how you separated yourself. Novelists will also often tell you that certainly there's something autobiographical in everything they write, and yet this is fiction. You were so close to it, and this had to be such an emotionally draining situation for you in real life. Did you find it difficult or necessary at all to build a wall between what happened and this novel?
I really did have to do that. You know, I knew that I could access the emotions that I needed, you know, in order to inform the story. But I absolutely had to say, you know, all of this needs to be separate, not only so that I could, you know, just not bring my son's story into it, you know, specifically, but also because I wanted to be true to the story I was telling. And, you know, that verisimilitude in fiction needs to come from the behaviors of the characters, not, you know, from what really happened in real life. That happens a lot in writing classes where somebody will write something and they'll say, you know, this really happened, but why don't you believe this, you know, in my story? And the response is always, you have to make it true on the page, whether or not it's true in real life.
Right.
So, yeah, I wanted to make sure that I kind of got into each character's head and, you know, made the story true for each of them.
Was that hard to do when you were trying to create the family, the parents of Amelia?
It really wasn't. I understood very much, I think, that if I were her parents, a young lady's parents, I would probably overreact too.
Mm.
I think that's a natural response. Now, you know, in this case, her father happens to be somebody who's got some clout. And so he behaves in ways that a lot of readers are telling me makes them very angry. But again, it's an understandable reaction. Men tell me this especially. Fathers of daughters, you know, that they get it, you know.
That they do identify with
him. Yes.
But they do have to respond to the fact that a lot of the attention he's getting and the fact that the law is taking it this seriously has to do with the fact that he has some money and some connections.
That's true as well. And that is often true in these kinds of situations, unfortunately.
You talked about what happens in writing class. I know you ultimately entered an MFA program for creative writing.
I did.
And there's this big debate about whether writers ought to spend the time in their MFA. How do you feel about it now that you're through it?
Wow. Well, for me personally, absolutely the right decision. I did not have high literary aspirations, okay? I went into it with a very sort of workmanlike approach to just learn the craft and to become a better writer and to understand the art of writing fiction. I think everyone has their own, you know, needs from a program like that. It's worth the time investment if your aim is to, say, teach afterward because the credentials are necessary. But there's no question that you will leave a program like that, you know, a much better writer than you went in.
This is your third novel, but you came relatively late to writing.
Yeah, and in fact, I was just talking with the gals out in the waiting room about this. I feel like I wish I had started about 10 years sooner. But on the other hand, you know, the path...
Why is that? How do you think things would have been different had you started earlier?
Oh, gosh. I feel very middle-aged right now, I guess, maybe because my sons are both adults now. It's the literary world right now is a really difficult place to be. Everything is changing in publishing. And so people who got entrenched a decade ago, I think, are a lot safer in their careers than those of us who are just getting started.
Do you think your writing would be different by now?
Well, I think it would have been a lot different then,
certainly.
Yeah. It's hard to say.
Started out, you got an MFA, and you talked about this building a bridge, or we're talking about building walls, and the verisimilitude that's required for creating characters. You've talked about the fictional dream state.
Right.
Is that where you have to be to write, or can you first of all, I should ask you to describe that.
The fictional dream state.
Yeah.
That's a concept that John Gardner talked about, I think, in the Art of Fiction, I think, is the writing book. And he talks about how you have to create this sort of, you know, alchemy, this sort of magic that happens between when the reader puts his or her eyes on the page and receives the story that is, you know, laid out on the page before them. Anything that pulls the reader out of that and makes them remember that they're just reading a book is a violation of this dream state. And so I think that every writer, you know, especially fiction writers, but even in creative nonfiction, you know, our job is to do the best we can to write something seamlessly so that the reader forgets that they're even in a book.
Do you have to be in a state like that to write?
I think my best writing occurs when I'm in that state. I wish that it were, you know, easily accessed all the time, but no, you have to work at it.
Do you? I mean, is it something that you can get to, or is it just a grace? Today I've got it, tomorrow, who knows?
It feels like a grace, but I think most writers will tell you that you will invite that grace if you just put your butt in the chair and get started.
So don't walk away yet.
That's right.
Don't give it another 10 minutes. In writing Exposure, did you find you had different ideas about your son's case having completed this book or in the process of writing the book?
What I found, I think, was as I got some distance from his situation, I was just more and more distressed, you know, generally that this was occurring. That's one of the reasons that I agreed to talk about his situation, you know, along with the book, because I feel like fiction can do more than just entertain us. There are a lot of ideas in fiction, even if it's, let's say, science fiction. You know, you go to the book for the story, but you can often take away something meaningful. And I felt like because his situation represented something that was sort of troubling in society today, it was sort of my job to do something about that since I was in the position to.
There's a danger in that for a writer, isn't there? Having an idea about something and wanting to say something and yet be true to the characters in the plot?
Yes. If you start a project from that position, it's not usually going to come out well. It's going to be, you know, some kind of, you know, hammering somebody over the head with the issue. I really, really tried not to do that.
Did you find this more difficult to do? Are you sort of relieved that it's over and can get back to something less close to you? Or are you looking for more material like that?
I hope I don't have anything quite so dramatic to draw from in my life. I am relieved in a way. I'm relieved that the book is out now and that I can talk about it and that people can talk about it. That's a good thing.
Because your first story was science fiction.
No, women's fiction.
Women's fiction. But it wasn't so rooted in
definitely not anything close to my heart.
What did your son think when he read the book? Has he read the book?
No. People ask this a lot. He is not a reader, despite all my best efforts. My younger son, though, who is about to be 18, has told me that this is the first of my books that he actually thinks he wants to read.
Wow.
My oldest son, though, he says that if it gets made into a film, he will absolutely go see it.
He will actually see the film. But still not read the book. What kind of reaction? You talked about men and women. What sorts of reactions? Do you get very different reactions from men and women?
No, actually. The differences really seem to be between people who are parents and people who are not. Otherwise, it's pretty
I would
uniform.
Think there'd be some generational differences, too, but maybe you haven't met them.
The young readers respond most to the love story part of it, and the parents respond most to the, oh, my God, this could happen to my kids part of it.
How do I stop this?
Yeah.
Don't give them a phone. Therese, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Frank.
Therese Fowler is the author of her new novel, Exposure. You can learn more about it at therese.fowler.com. You spell Therese, T-H-E-R-E-S-E, therese.fowler.com. Just ahead on the state of things, the music of the Radials. Stay with us.